really enjoy following a lot of what he does, and he has his own personal likes and dislikes, and he also covers Texas for InsideTexas.com, but he and I have talked to him about this. He's kind of learned on his own what people are doing and kind of about what makes things work on offense or defense. And Ian Boyd joins us after a couple of weeks of the college football season here on ESPN Central Texas. You had heard, Ian, quite a bit about what LSU was going to do in the offense. Were you surprised at how good they were and how they were able to accomplish that on Saturday?
Oh, definitely. It was kind of the worst-case scenario for Texas. You knew that they were going to try to do something like that. I never bought into the idea that Coach Orgeron was going to pull the plug on it if they had trouble and go back to the I formation or something like that. But the level of precision from Joe Burrow was pretty impressive. Obviously, they're going to be a real handful for the SEC this year. They've been a handful for the last 10 years, and they've never had an offense nearly this good.
You know, you also have actually a breakdown of that 3rd and 17. There's been a lot of discussion about what Todd Orlando did. Did they cut their own throat with that?
They definitely didn't help. Sometimes hearing them talk about it after the fact, it almost seems like they thought that that was one of their best chances of getting a stop there. They the circumstances of the call were just completely baffling. Texas had scored on every possession in the second half, completely worn down the LSU defense. You have them in 3rd and 17 with 2.5 minutes to potentially go win the game on a final drive, and then they just risk it all like that. It's amazing. You would have thought that they would finally cut their losses at that point in the game and just try to drop everyone and cover every passing lane and make Burrow earn it. But they like to Todd Orlando, I think when push comes to shove, he'd rather be on the offensive than the defensive. So he went for it. The problem is that he's not an offensive coordinator. He's a defensive coordinator. And so when it didn't work out, he failed to give Sam Ellinger a chance to go win them the game.
How much does Texas miss Whittington right now?
Well, not as much as you would think, given how well they played. The kid, Rashawn Johnson, was playing quarterback last year at Port Neches Groves in high school, and mm-hmm. then moved him to running back during fall camp, and he actually played pretty well. The depth is definitely a concern, and I think that some of the Texas really carved up LSU, flexing out their running back and their tight end and going five wide, and you assume that that would only be that much more dangerous if Jordan Whittington was on the field, but they have so many weapons on offense that they've been able to get by so far.
All right. Last year they had the big receivers, and yeah, they put up a lot of points. And I'm not talking so much specifically about LSU because I've just started the show by going, I wish those two teams would get a room or move on. The game is over. I know there's been a lot of drama after the game as yeah. well about Eric, whatever. But how much Devin Duvernay, who was an Art Briles recruit, you know that, signed with Baylor,
yeah.
And then moved on when after Pepper Hamilton and all that went on. He's kind of been there. He's made a couple of decent plays. Why now? Why? First of all, he looks like he is strong as an ox lower body. He's not the big, tall, lanky guy like a Colin Johnson or the big, physical Jordan Humphrey, but a little Jordan Humphrey, excuse me. Why now does he look like he's about to explode?
I think part of it is that they moved him to the slot, which is where I did a breakdown on this in the fall. If you look at and during fall camp, if you look at Tom Herman's offenses back to Houston and Ohio State, particularly at Houston, the slot receiver always gets a lot of action, just because he's closer to the quarterback. He's in the middle of the field. It's kind of the tip of the spear in the spread offense. And so they moved him there from another position where he was consistently the furthest receiver from the quarterback. And so they moved him in tighter. So he's a more heavily targeted. He gets all the targets on the seam routes and the little bubble screens and stuff. And obviously he's a total bear to try to tackle.
Yeah.
Because he's so strong and tough. So that's part of it. And also Sam Ellinger is, a year better. and they're putting more and more on his shoulders in the passing game every year. So he's chucking it around a lot. He'll probably chuck it around a lot all year. Probably the guy that plays that more remote position that Duvernay played last year, Brandon Eagles, looks like he's going to get maybe more work than Duvernay did last year as well. So it's a few different factors.
I understand Lincoln Riley appears to be like the next young genius in what he's done with the quarterbacks, with Baker Mayfield, and then obviously last year as well with Kyler Murray. But both of them were also now, they're both now starting in the NFL. I really never thought that Jalen Hurts was going to end up being effective. I knew he'd be good because the Oklahoma offense is going to be good. But it's almost as if he's been in that system for 4 years with what I saw in their opening game against Houston. I know Lincoln Riley is amazing, but has even how well Jalen Hurts played surprised you and how looks he looks so free and easy doing it?
Not really yet. If he goes out and executes their passing game like Murray or Mayfield did in an upcoming game against a better defense, so that'll catch my eye. But what I've seen so far, and I didn't watch the South Dakota game, full disclosure, but what I saw in the Houston game was that they just ran a lot of the sort of power option schemes that they had mixed in here and there for Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, and they just kind of expanded those to be a bigger part of the offense. And so he's running the option. He's running behind, pulling guards, reading the edge guy. This is when he was at his best in Alabama. That's what it looked like. Was Lane Kiffin had him running zone option every other play, and he'd run inside and outside. When you get him going in that kind of stuff, he's definitely effective. When you give him a clear post snap read on play action where he's looking for a tight end that he knows is going to be open because he threw a fake block, he's going to nail that throw. I'm kind of waiting. I'm in a wait-and-see on mode with him, though. I want to see what happens if the team can actually take away some of their run game stuff and make him make progressions and throws to beat them, because that's where Alabama would really crater, was when teams could do that. Oklahoma and Alabama both, it's really hard. It's really hard to make them beat you that way. So we'll see when that becomes relevant.
You were intrigued by Phil Snow and what they were going to do defensively this year with the three-man front. I'm not sure if you had a chance to watch. They have not played somebody that's going to push them. But obviously 2 years ago, Liberty and UT San Antonio beat them in a disastrous start. But they do seem to have better athletes, more speed, obviously more physical. That they'll get tested when Iowa State's in town in a couple of 3 weeks. But have you seen them at all in what they've done now that there's a game that's been played? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I was able to take in a fair amount of the UTSA game with the Big 12 was putting condensed versions of all their games on YouTube, so it makes it really easy to check back and watch different Big 12 teams. So I did that and had a little post on it. It looked a little mixed to my eyes. I think that the safeties are playing a lot faster in this scheme. I think Rule has done a good job. Last year, I thought Baylor played fairly physical. It was just that they were lost sometimes, so they'd have assignment busts. They looked much more confident that they knew what they were doing. They were playing fast. Their safeties were tackling well. Obviously, they knew where to expect to find the ball, and so they would reach to get there and bring their hats hard when they did. I don't know about the front. They showed a couple different things. They showed some of the more Iowa State style of three down, which has worked well for the Cyclones, but they have some big kids and they coach them up really well. I'm curious to see what Baylor ends up doing there and if they have the big horses up front to hold up when they play Big 12 teams that have big punishing run games.
Yeah.
But I do think worst case scenario is that this is a Baylor team that gives up points where they just kind of bleed out slowly from teams kind of pounding away at them. They don't look like they're going to be as bad about just giving away free points like they have been the last couple of years.
Yeah, they're trying to keep everything in front of them as well. And I do think the speed in the secondary is obvious in how they've grown up with Graylin Arnold and Chris Miller, among others. All right, Ian, anything else in college football that's caught your attention through first 2.5 weeks or so? Anything else other than what we wanted to jump out at? Obviously, Clemson looked impressive, and just kind of methodically went about their business. A&M, Kellen Mond was squeezed like a boa constrictor. anything else that caught your attention?
Yeah, you know, the Clemson in that game, I just released a new book called Flyover Football. You can find it on my website or on Amazon. Flyover Football, How the Big 12 Became the Frontier for Modern Football. And in the last chapter of the book, I describe how Iowa State developed their three-down defense that Baylor's been kind of copying and borrowing from this year. And I explained why that defense is probably the future for college football. And then lo and behold, Clemson was running it a fair amount against Texas A&M. So Brent Venables had already gone out to Ames, Iowa. Venables, a man who had no shortage of success playing defense in this level, coaching defense in this level, he went and he borrowed a bunch of stuff from it, and he was running it in week two. So that was eye-opening. If anybody was hoping to get the jump on Clemson by borrowing some cutting-edge Big 12 stuff, good luck with that, because they're already ahead of the game again.
Hey, man, thank you very much. Appreciate it. The fact that you mentioned that about the Big 12, when you see LSU after years and years of pounding with the I formation, ground and pound and ball possession and great special teams and defense, and they're throwing it, they might as well join the conference. They might as well just join the conference. Hey, it was fun to watch that game. I know it was went down to the wire. Ian, thanks for your time. Always appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Ian Boyd with Inside Tech.